In the Studio is sponsored by the Army ROTC and by ONDCP and the Partnership for a Drug-Free America.
Doc, you did some time in the captain's jail for the last time. He didn't like the way your tan was in the morning.
Excuse me, is this thing on?
Whoa. Yeah. Excuse me.
You're welcome.
Guitar up.
One,
turn
two,
that guitar
three.
Up.
Hello and welcome to In the Studio. I'm Redbeard, bringing you the stories behind the greatest rock albums in history. Today in the studio, it's the tragic story of the original Pretenders and the remarkable comeback album which snatched victory from the jaws of defeat.
Come on now, in the middle of the road, yeah.
And 2 days after we threw Pete out, well, totally out of the blue, Jimmy died, you know, from some lethal cocktail he took when he went out at some multiple sclerosis benefit, and Jimmy went out and just copped it that night. So suddenly it was me and Martin, and I mean really suddenly, like within 2 days. It went like from everything to nothing.
City, oh, way to go, Ohio.
Hi, this is Chrissy Hynde. It's been 15 years since we recorded Learning to Crawl, and I'm here in the studio to talk about it.
Village Voice editor Ann Powers writes, quote, "More than Debbie Harry, too cold. Kate Bush, too weird. Or even Patti Smith, too early and too far off the charts. The Pretenders' Chrissy Hynde owns the heart of alternative as the punk rock mother of us all. Partly, it's her story. Self-defined, scabby nobody escapes the classic rock Midwest for mod England just before the scene explodes and forms a band. Then she reconquers America on her own terms, chronicling a girl's fight to make herself special when no one else thinks she can be. Who Chrissy Hynde was and what she sang about was inseparable from the way the Pretenders sounded." End quote. Growing up in Akron, Ohio, then attending Kent State University immediately following the killing of four classmates by National Guard riot troops in 1970, Hynde felt compelled to leave America. Long enamored with a naive image of English life, she emigrated to London in 1973 with a girlfriend who only stayed a few weeks. Alone, working illegally, she sought out the rock and roll scene she had read about back home in an English music paper, similar to America's Rolling Stone magazine. Here's Chrissy Hynde of the Pretenders.
And I met some people that worked for the NME, the New Musical Express. And the NME was kind of significant to me because I could get it at Gray Drugstore in Akron. It was, you know, a few weeks late, but I could get it sometimes. And, you know, I remember cutting a picture of Iggy Pop out on my wall and having it and thinking that everyone would know who Iggy Pop was when I got there. Well, it only took me about a month to meet the people, the girl who took the picture and the guy that wrote the article, and somehow I was working at the NME just like that, just by accident. Oh, it was just a job. Yeah, it was a hand-to-mouth thing. I mean, I didn't even think I could write. I was shocked, actually, when they asked me, just because I was so opinionated and I was, you know, spouting my mouth off about an album in a pub, and this guy leans over and he goes, "Hey, you should write for us." And it turns out he was the assistant editor of the paper, and I just, you know, probably gave him a dirty look. And I thought you had to have some sort of qualifications to write or do something. I didn't know that you could just be, you know, any bum off the street who just, you know, had some ideas. And that's all I was. And then I wrote for them for a while, which was fantastic. I realized I could actually work at home. Well, you know, I had a room somewhere. And I didn't have to keep hours, and that was great for me because I wasn't really good at that sort of thing. And I did that until, I guess after about a year of that, I started really just putting everything down. I was getting very frustrated, and I didn't like anything. By 1974, in the music scene, it was, I just kept being more and more frustrated and really criticizing what was going on. And then I thought, well, if I feel this bad about rock music, then, you know, maybe I'm starting to think that I could do better than that. And so I thought I better put my money where my mouth was, you know.
We'll be right back.
middle of the road. He's trying to find me. I'm standing in the middle of life with my pants behind me. I got a smile for everyone I meet. As long as you don't tie dragging my bay or dropping the bomb on my street. Now come on, baby, or get in the road. Come on now, in the middle of the road, yeah. Middle of the road, you see the darndest things, like fat guys driving round in jeeps through the city, wearing big diamond rings and silk suits, past corrugated tin shacks full of with kids. So man, I don't mean a Hampstead nursery. When you own a big chunk of the bloody third world, the babies just come with the scenery. Now come on, baby, get in the road. Come on now. I can't get from the cab to the curb without some little jerk on my back. Don't harass me, can't you tell? I'm going home, I'm tired as hell. I'm not the cat I used to be. I got a kid, I'm 33, baby. Get in the road. Come on now. In the middle of the road.
From the Pretenders' 1984 album Learning to Crawl, that's Middle of the Road, some rock philosophy written and sung by Chrissy Hynde.
The middle of the road to me is really what it's about. It's about the middle way, the Tao Te Ching, talking about the middle way. It's not really about, I just used the middle of the road because that was what people were referring to as mediocrity at the time. And I didn't mind hiding my, you know, more my angle on it as being taking the middle way. The original Pretender's Last Stand was a show we did in Bangkok, Thailand. And I think driving by all those corrugated tin shacks and seeing, you know, the poverty, you know, and also my general feelings about the mercenary ways of dealing with the third world by, you know, some of the powers that be. You know, that's kind of what that song was about. You know, and trying to stay in the middle of the road or, you know, take the middle way as it would be prescribed in the Tao Te Ching. Or
the Pretenders' guys were all from Hereford, England. Bass player Pete Farndon, drummer Martin Chambers, and guitarist James Honeyman Scott. Rolling Stone magazine called their 1980 debut, quote, one of the most brilliant in rock. An EP and Pretenders 2 were followed by a world tour, but temper tantrums on the road resulted in several postponements. While Chrissie Hynde in particular developed a reputation for being confrontational, few outside the Pretenders knew to what extent drug use was to blame for most of their woes. Hynde stopped short of being controlled by drugs.
I won't be. You know, my freedom is too important to me. And so, you know, I'm not going to let something dictate itself to me. Although, you know, most certainly I did tamper and I was a total asshole a lot of the time. You know, I mean, I don't imagine that I had a great reputation in those days. I wouldn't even let the police in a building come into our sound checks. You know, to me, those were like private affairs. And this was when we're getting our sound and we're dealing with stuff. And, you know, I was extremely shy, to be honest, and very nervous to do shows and had stage fright and all that. And that's how all young bands are. And it culminates in, you know, it looking like you're a real prima donna. But really, you're just, you know, you're out of your depth. You don't really know what you're doing. Nothing bothers me now, you know, because I just don't take it personally anymore. You know, I know what I'm capable of, and I'll deliver that. And if people want more, we'll go next door, you know, go down the road. Because I just give what I've got, and, you know, I don't get too bent out of shape about things anymore.
The situation came to a head June 14, 1982, when the Pretenders announced that bass player Pete Farndon had been fired. Chrissie Hynde.
And in the early days, we sort of put the band together, and we were, like, full of enthusiasm, and we wanted the same things. But as time went on, you know, and I mean, now when I look at it, it was a short period of time. We got the band together. Everything was going well. And, you know, I loved Pete, but to my mind, he got too much into the sort of rock and roll mythology of it all. I mean, he met the Heartbreakers when they came to London, and, you know, they were all junkies, and he really admired that and thought that was so cool, Johnny Thunders, and he sort of emulated that, you know. And, you know, that's what he got into. And we kicked him out of the band. And it, you know, it wounded him deeply. And it certainly hurt me because I knew I'd started it with him and I didn't want to see it go that way. But it got to the point to where we couldn't work together. And anyone that's had that situation in a band, and many people have, will tell you the same thing. It's not an original story there. And then he died about 8 months later. And 2 days after we threw Pete out, well, totally out of the blue, Jimmy died, you know, from some lethal cocktail he took when he went out at some multiple sclerosis benefit, and Jimmy went out and just copped it that night. So suddenly it was me and Martin, and I mean really suddenly, like within 2 days. It went like from everything to nothing.
City. Time, one more vodka and wine. pictures when your property took the A train. I wonder where your manners went. You were standing at the station in your briefcase was your aftershave and underwear. Can you hear the whistle?
Groove stretched out on the Pretenders album Learning to Crawl. That's Time the Avenger. Up next, we'll discover why, after dissension and tragedy rips through the Pretenders, Chrissy Hynde and Martin Chambers decide to try and continue. I'm Red Beard in the studio for the Pretenders Learning to Crawl.
A few years from now, you're going to be handed a diploma. You'll get a handshake from a dean or a president or some such person. But this diploma is not going to guarantee you a career or a job. Not even an interview for a job, because a degree is not magic. It's paper, wax, and a ribbon. So you better get prepared. This is where Army ROTC comes in. It's geared toward the real world, so come graduation, you will be too. Call 1-800-USA-ROTC. It might be the smartest college course you ever take.
Paid for by Army ROTC.
This man was talking to my brother, and he was a crackhead, and he got shot. Sounds like a whole lot of people shooting. I feel sorry for them. They have to stay on the street because they take drugs and they think they need it, and they don't. I think that's why I want to be a teacher. That I want to live a successful life and grow up to be a nice woman. But I'm going to try and make time to plant flowers and stuff.
Girlfriend, you are beautiful. A message from ONDCP and the Partnership for a Drug-Free America.
So you're going to college, you're going to get some B's, you're going to write for the school paper, you're going to do a summer internship where you sort envelopes and lick stamps, and then after 4 years, you're going to graduate along with a million others just like you. So you might ask, how do I distinguish myself from this sea of me's? Well, how about Army ROTC? It's no mystical secret to success, but it will prepare you for the real world. Interested? Call 1-800-USA-ROTC. It might be the smartest college course you ever take.
Paid for by Army ROTC.
If I hadn't stopped smoking pot, right now I'd probably be dead. I was just like everyone else. I was a normal kid, and I used to say, pot's never going to do anything to me, or getting high isn't going to do anything to me. I'm in control. And, you know, I used to think I was a tough guy. And I was just like everybody else. I used to watch the commercials, and I used to say to myself, that'll never be me, never be me, you know, and it is me.
A message from ONDCP and the Partnership for a Drug-Free America.
This is Chrissy Hynde of the Pretenders. I'm in the studio, and it's the 15th anniversary of Learning to Crawl. That's what we're talking about.
Thanks, Chrissy. I'm Redbeard. Mid-June 1982, one of rock's most promising bands, The Pretenders, decides to fire one of their original members, bass player Pete Farndon. 2 days later, guitarist Jimmy Honeyman Scott dies of an accidental overdose. Could anything be more difficult right then? Here's Chrissy Hynde.
Yeah, well, I got pregnant. I mean, this is all part of my plan, really. And that was no accident. You know, it was starting to get to on my nerves a bit that, you know, I spent so long trying to get a band together, and for years people were saying, hey, what are you doing now? And I'd say, oh, I'm still trying to get a band together. And they'd say, oh, you're still trying to get a band together. And I felt really humiliated by that after a couple years, and I really was determined. I knew I was going to get this band together. And when I finally got it together, you know, you do one album, and after that everyone's going, great, when's the next album? And, like, suddenly it just started seeming too easy somehow. And I thought, well, you know, I was with someone I was in love with, and I thought, you know, this is more part of the divine plan than me putting albums out. So I went ahead with that. And then I didn't even have a chance to tell Pete and Jimmy that I was, you know, about 3 months pregnant. And all of a sudden, in fact, I had a meeting with Martin and Jimmy to discuss what we were going to do at Pete. And at that meeting, I said, by the way, you guys, I'm pregnant. And we talked about that. And they said, okay, well, again, nothing I would have ever gone to the public with, because, you know, to me, it's my own personal business. The band said, hey, that's all right. We'll support you. Whatever happens is fine. We'll just get on with it. They didn't seem bothered about it at all, to which I was extremely grateful. And then, of course, you know, 2 days later, Jimmy's dead, and we'd fired Pete. So now I was pregnant. It was just me and Martin, you know. So, well, you know, I was pretty resilient. I was only about 28, so, you know, I had a lot of strength. Well, I suppose it was hard, you know. I'm not one to, like, cry about it now. And I got on with it, and I had to, you know, but the bad news was that I was pregnant, but I had to, you know, I was traumatized at the loss of my two best friends, Pete and Jimmy. One, tragically, because we fired him, which was, like, in some ways more painful than Jimmy dying, you know, because at least that was an accident. So it was extremely traumatic, I suppose, when I look back on it. I mean, you know, I was just getting on with it at the time. And like I said, I wouldn't have talked about it. I mean, this is like 15 years ago now, so I can sort of, I'm certainly not trying to sensationalize it to my own end or to win public sympathy or anything. Everyone goes through this. Name anyone else my age who hasn't had a few friends, you know, keel over along the way, you know? But yeah, I had to get on with replacing two members of the band while I was pregnant, so I wasn't really in the most rock mode. And it wasn't really what I had been planning on doing during that pregnancy, you know, to replace my best friends.
Done to you. as I stand here today, knowing it deep in my heart, they'll fall to ruin one day for making us part. Of you, oh, those were the happiest days of my life. Like a break in the battle was your part, oh, in the wretched life of a lonely heart. Now we're back on the train. Chain gang.
Complete with the ooh, ah. In the choruses, paying tribute to Sam Cooke's original Chain Gang song, that's another Chrissie Hynde composition from Learning to Crawl called Back on the Chain Gang. I asked Chrissie if she knew with any certainty if Jimmy Honeyman Scott's death had any connection to Pete Farndon's dismissal 2 days earlier.
Oh, definitely not, no. No, Jimmy was very unhealthy when I met him. He'd already been a little speed freak in Hereford, you know, an unhealthy kid. I mean, wicked sense of humor, and I just, you know, I learned to absolutely love him to death. You know, he was like our little brother, and you know, as you know, an exceptional guitar player, and certainly he created the Pretender sound with me. You know, he brought out the melody in me, and I made him fire out these amazing guitar solos. You know, I egged him on and spurred him on to glory. But it was just a careless. Someone slipped him something, and you know, he was probably a bit drunk, and it was late at night, and you know, someone slipped him a lethal cocktail, and that was it. Nothing to do with Pete at all. Hey, Jimmy's the one that wanted Pete out of there. Our loyalty was to the music, and nothing was going to stop us in our musical quest.
However noble Hynde's intentions, the fact remained that she was very pregnant and could not offer prospective replacements a tour to earn money for an indefinite period of time. Not a really attractive situation.
No. Well, how many takers are you going to get to some chick who's pregnant anyway? Hey, do you want to join my band, you know? I didn't really think that it was a very lucrative offer. But, well, back on the Chain Gang, we'd been kind of working on that in sound checks, you know, and Jimmy had played it and stuff. And then I sort of finished writing it, and I suppose dedicated it to him in some ways. And then it wasn't too hard to piece together at that point, because Jimmy was so fresh still to me. His desires and his wishes musically were still very obvious to me, how he would see things. He was a big admirer of Billy Bremner from Rockpile, the Scottish guitar player, fantastic guitar player. And when I decided we had to go in and record Back on the Chain Gang, well, I knew that Billy was who Jimmy would have wanted to get in, so I never even had to think about it. I just called Billy. You know, we did record Chain Gang and got Billy in, and that was fantastic. And I probably would have continued to work with Billy, and I certainly did a lot of work with Billy. But he lived in L.A., and, you know, this is a London-based band, and, you know, I've never really gotten on with musicians who don't live in London. It doesn't really work for me, you know, for all the logistical reasons. That's how we got Robbie McIntosh in. Robbie was someone else that Jimmy had met, and Jimmy said, hey, I met this guy, Robbie McIntosh. I think he should maybe, you know, try to do some live work with us. So when the time came to call on Robbie, and it kind of weirded Robbie out because, you know, he was expecting a call to say, hey, will you come down and join us? And instead he gets a call and he says, hey, will you come down and replace Jimmy? And that was hard for Robbie. Well, it was hard for me.
Eventually, Chrissie Hynde gave birth to a daughter, but the search for a permanent bass player continued. I wondered what consideration, if any, was given to letting Pete Farndon back into the Pretenders.
You know, everyone thinks that I'm the hard ass and it all came from me. But actually, you know, I was the one who was kind of relented and said, look, we can't do this to him. You know, we got to give him a second chance. And at the meeting I had with Martin and Jimmy, well, Jimmy flatly said, if Pete's in, I'm out. I won't work with him. And they were a lot more focused on, you know, the reality of the situation. And we had a hard time. You know, it's hard to work with someone who is going against the grain at every juncture because they're, you know, too f***ed up to get with the program, you know. So, and I was actually pretty shocked by it. I thought that was really hard. But they were adamant. You know, then when Jimmy was gone, it didn't seem like a formula for success, you know, to get me, Pete, and Martin together. And, you know, again, Pete was out of it. So, I mean, I considered it every day.
That's an example of what Village Voice editor Ann Powers called in Chrissy Hynde, and I quote, a hard-headed but soft-hearted survivor, perhaps best illustrated by the true story behind a song on Learning to Crawl with the innocent title of Watching the Clothes.
On our first album, well, the first single that, well, and last single we ever had that went to number one, Brass and Pocket, was in the charts. One of the fellows I shared a house with died of, again, some sort of heroin whiskey overdose. And so I gathered up his laundry and took it down to the laundromat because I didn't think it would be right for anyone to come and have to take out his belongings. And I thought I'd do his laundry for him so that, you know, he wouldn't have his dirty laundry there. And I just remember watching his clothes going around in the machine and thinking that he's never going to wear them again. I mean, it sounds sentimental now, but I think that's where I had the idea for Watching the Clothes. Show Me was obviously, you know, me talking about my daughter when she came into the world. Welcome to the human race. You know, show me the meaning of the word, love. That kind of speaks for itself. And referring to her from, you know, welcome here from outer space. You know, where do these spirits come from? Where does the soul transmigrate to and from? And, you know, maybe you can show me now. You can teach me. And that was what that was about.
Show me the meaning of the word. Show me the meaning of the word. 'Cause I've heard so much about it. They say welcome to the human race, with its wars, disease, and brutality. You with your innocence and grace, restore some pride and dignity to a world in decline. Welcome to a special place.
Show me the meaning of the word.
From new mother to new daughter, that's The Pretenders with Show Me. I'm Redbeard. This modern-day passion play continues with more tragedy amidst the recording of one of the biggest comeback albums in rock history. I'm Redbeard, in the studio for The Pretenders, Learning to Crawl.
You take it all. English lit, bio, chem, a little theater to broaden the horizons, and after all this higher education, what do you got to show for it? A degree. Just like a million others graduate in college just like you. So you might ask, how do I distinguish myself from the sea of me's? How about Army ROTC? Might make you a little wiser, will definitely prepare you for the real world. Interested? Call 1-800-USA-ROTC. It may be the smartest college course you can take.
Paid for by Army ROTC.
What would you do if a stranger talked to you?
I wouldn't talk to him because he might be bad.
And what would you tell someone playing with matches?
I'll tell them to stop because they might start a fire.
How come you know so much?
My mommy told me.
Oh, and what did your mommy tell you about drugs?
Your children are listening. Are you talking? A message from ONDCP and the Partnership for a Drug-Free America.
A few years from now, you're going to be handed a diploma. You'll get a handshake from a dean or a president or some such person. But this diploma is not going to guarantee you a career or a job. Not even an interview for a job, because a degree is not magic. It's paper, wax, and a ribbon. So you better get prepared. This is where Army ROTC comes in. It's geared toward the real world, so come graduation, you will be too. Call 1-800-USA-ROTC. It might be the smartest college course you ever take.
Paid for by Army ROTC.
Rest easy. You won't find marijuana in your son's sock drawer, and you won't find it under his bed. Don't worry. He's not carrying it around. It's not in his book bag or in his pockets. Be happy. He's not buying marijuana. He wouldn't know where to. Rest easy. The marijuana he's smoking belongs to his best friend, who keeps it in his sock drawer under his bed.
Don't kid yourself. Talk to your kids about marijuana. They're ready to listen. A message from ONDCP and the Partnership for a Drug-Free America.
Hi, this is Chrissy Hind. It's been 15 years since we recorded Learning to Crawl, and I'm here in the studio to talk about it.
And I'm Redbeard. One of the most memorable songs on The Pretenders' 1984 album, Learning to Crawl, was the scathing indictment of American urban renewal called My City Was Gone. Here's the author, Chrissy Hind.
And I was back in Akron, and that's when I noticed that all the stuff that I loved when I lived there, when I was a teenager, you know, what I used to do when I lived in Akron, I guess I lived about, well, quite a few miles from the downtown area. Five, six, seven, 8 miles. And my girlfriend and I, we would just walk down there. We'd just walk all day. We'd just walk and walk and walk and talk. And then we'd get down there and we'd have an iced tea or something and walk around our favorite shops. You know, places where I wasn't really allowed to go, because I guess my parents would have thought it was rough. I didn't tell them. But, you know, that's all we had to do, is walk. Or we'd go through, you know, and on the way stop in the cemeteries and stuff to get some peace. And, I mean, what else do you do in a city that's been, you know, in a state of decay? You go to the cemeteries and you try to find the old buildings where you can find some kind of, you know, connection. So, and I went down, and like all the places in what I talk about in My City Was Gone, you know, the train station where we used to love to run down and run on the platform, because, you know, I grew up on Jack Kerouac when I was a teenager, and I wanted to be on that freight train and I wanted to travel like that. And they took it away, you know, and to me, I realized they took the heart out of the city.
Ohio. Ohio. But my family was gone. I stood on the back porch. There was nobody home. I was stunned and amazed. My childhood memories sort of swirled past like the wind through the trees. Hey, oh, where to go, Ohio?
Chrissie Hynde of The Pretenders.
And to me, and I remember when I wrote the song, I thought, this is just too obvious, you know. I thought it was a bit elementary, that song. You know, everything was torn down and replaced with parking spaces. You know, I thought people would think, like, yeah, we know that, but what else can you tell us? But funnily enough, you know, it does seem to be quite a hit. And as I've traveled across America, you know, this damage that's been done to all the cities, it's just universal. Very few cities have escaped it. I mean, there are a few that where they've had a rehabilitation plan that's worked, but mainly it's just tearing everything down, putting up a few mindless freeways that don't really go anywhere or mean anything. And then these days they're putting up ballparks, and that's like infusing some sort of life back into the downtown area. I mean, a lot of it was a racist move in the early days. And it was just a yeah, it was a way to, you know, once the blacks moved into the downtown area, they just let them decay. All the whites bailed out. And then the landlords either burned them down or said there was asbestos problems or whatever. They put a highway through. That's exactly what happened in Akron. And I resented that deeply. I resented it, but then I thought, where was I when the bulldozers came in? I wasn't lying in front of them. And then I took it very personally and felt that, you know, it was partly I was to blame. And I think we're all to blame for the American situation. You know, none of us can put our hand to our heart and say, this has nothing to do with me. And so, you know, and actually, my great shame was that I'd left. You know, I knew I wasn't going to live in it. And I left, and I came back, and it was gone. And I felt, yeah, where was I when the bulldozers were here? You know, so I felt pathetic writing a song about it, but I didn't know what else to do.
The Pretenders eventually found a permanent bass player, Malcolm Foster. Original bass player Pete Farndon never did get a chance to rejoin, because while the band was recording Learning to Crawl in April 1983, Pete Farndon died of an overdose of heroin. At that point, Chrissie Hynde and drummer Martin Chambers had the opportunity to disband altogether, or at the least, let the Pretenders' name rest in peace with Jimmy and now Pete.
You know, when Jimmy died, I knew that we tried so hard to get this, to create this sound that we were really happy with. And, you know, this sound that was the Pretenders, and it really had come from the four of us, and Jimmy, without Jimmy, it could have never happened. I mean, Jimmy was everything to me. Jimmy really was my right hand throughout this. And when he went like that, I realized that, you know, you think about, when you're really close to somebody, you think about how they would react to what you're doing after they're gone. And I think if I had just said, that's it, this is just, you know, let's just forget this band, that all the work that we put into it and the sound that Jimmy had created, that glorious jangly guitar sound and all the stuff that he, you know, he was just a young kid, you know, and he copped it so early on, and he influenced so many guitar players. I mean, I meet people all the time on tour who come up to me and they say, you know, Jimmy was my guitar icon, you know, that's why I learned how to play. And I didn't feel that I could let it all go, and then it would kind of be like it was Jimmy's fault. I felt very driven to perpetuate the sound and to keep the tradition of the sound going in his honor, really, because I thought he would be horrified to think that, you know, because of him, because of some dumbass night out that he had where he, you know, accidentally died, that that would be the end of the music. I just felt I couldn't do that to him. And really, for probably more than any other reason, that's why I kept the thing alive, you know, to keep the spirit alive of Jimmy and Pete.
Points of view. on me. And she wasn't fooled. Never trust a user with your television overnight. When the show you want to play your master is Dallas on a Tuesday night. I heard you. You heard me.
From the Pretenders album Learning to Crawl, that's called I Hurt You. Much of the speculation surrounding this complex period in the Pretenders' history was due to the intense personal nature of the double tragedies and of Hines' reluctance to share it.
When the guys died, I didn't talk about it because the way I am, my personal life and the things that I do, you know, I'm not a celebrity type, publicity seeking. I don't make a big deal out of my, you know, what some programs would say, you know, the triumphs and the tragedies. I don't want to go there. You know, my life is my life and it's no one else's. And I think every cocktail waitress you've ever met has her triumphs and her tragedies. And, you know, everybody has them. And to play up for it for public consumption to me is really, to me, I feel it's undignified and I don't like to go there. And when Pete and Jimmy died, I didn't talk to the press about it. About a year later when they asked, you know, I had to admit that certain things had happened, but I certainly never would play up anything personal. It's just not in my nature, you know. I mean, it seems that people make their whole career of it now by, you know, if I have anything personal to say, at least I'll disguise it. I'm a traditionalist. I'll disguise it within a song, but I don't like to, you know, bare my soul to the public. I mean, a lot of people like that, and that's what their public love them for. And, you know, but I don't want that. I don't want the public too close to me. You know, I don't want anyone too close to me, to be honest, except the people in my chosen, you know, my friends. You know, I want my freedom. That's what's important to me is freedom.
Of you wherever you go.
gets colder day by day. I miss you. I can hear people singing. It must be Christmas time. I hear people singing. It must be Christmas time.
"2,000 Miles." Well, again, you know, this probably paid tribute to the fact that Jimmy was gone. 2,000 Miles. It was just kind of a Christmas song, and when we recorded it in our studios in London, it was just, our studios was above a building that looks right down onto Oxford Circus, and it was at Christmas time, just before Christmas, and there was all these little white twinkling lights and all the trees. That's what the decorations were that year. And as we recorded this song, we looked down into these white twinkling lights, and I just think we captured the spirit of it so well in that song.
We'll be back in the studio after this.
23,726. Just an example of your brain's ability to comprehend numbers. Marijuana impairs this ability. It messes up your concentration and makes it harder to remember things. Please, tell your kids. If you can't see how important it is, answer this. What was the number I just mentioned at the beginning of this commercial? See, it's hard enough to remember things as it is.
A message from ONDCP and the Partnership for a Drug-Free America.
No cinnamon gum freshens breath longer than Big Red.
Just a little longer. Stay close a little longer. Hold tight a little longer. Longer with Big Red.
If you want to make your fresh breath last, you only want Big Red gum.
Uh-huh. Hang together longer. Make the night a little longer. Give your breath long-lasting freshness with Big Red.
Okay, so I suggest you check out the Air Force, and you say, I don't want to lose my freedom. Come on now. This bunch would go to the mat to protect freedom. So do you think they're going to barricade themselves up on some base? No way. They go out. They have fun. They travel around the world. They're all about freedom. The deal is they're using their freedom to make something of themselves instead of making a big dent on the futon. Like you, pal. Hey, give it some thought. Call 1-800-423-USAF. Name high. Paid for by the U.S. Air Force.
It's not okay to steal. It's not okay to swear. It's not okay to cut glass. It's not okay to smoke marijuana. It's not okay to lie. It's not okay to fight. It's not okay to cheat. It's not okay to smoke marijuana.
You let your kids know how you feel about other things. Make sure they know how you feel about marijuana. For as much as they rip on you, they respect you, and they are prepared to listen. You may need to say it over and over, because we know what happens if it's never said at all.
A message from ONDCP and the Partnership for a Drug-Free America.